All right, everybody, welcome back to the Game Trail Podcast. I'm going to hit you guys with promo codes first and foremost because I have a guest today. I don't usually get like nervous to talk to guests. I'm a little more nervous to talk to this one than I am usually, which is weird because it's my brother Tyler. But we're going to jump in. I wanted to talk to my brother Tyler. I thought you guys would get a kick out of meeting my brother, and I wanted to talk some hunting stories and maybe talk a little bit about the way he and I grew up and our family in general. And I just want to have a conversation with Tyler. So promo code first and foremost, you guys can use the promo code GAMETRAIL to sign up for a Go Hunt Insider account. If you do that, you're going to get $50 back in the Go Hunt gear shop. You can use that towards the purchase of any gear that you want in the shop. Also, I wanted to shout out Matthews Archery. Matthews has been a sponsor of the podcast because those guys have been really good to me. And I would encourage you, if you get a chance, get to your local Matthews Pro Shop and shoot a brand new Lift X and see what you think. So I've been playing with mine a lot lately. I've been shooting a lot of arrows lately, mostly out of the Title, which is a target bow. But between those two bows, I've been putting lots of arrows downrange this year already. And they're just great shooting bows. So get yourself to a pro shop, shoot a Lift X, or even get into target archery, maybe check out a Title. So got that out of the way. I'm going to jump in with my brother Tyler. So my brother Tyler is my second oldest brother. How old are you? You had a birthday here recently, right?
Yeah, you should know. Come on, man. No. Yeah, I just turned 55 in January. So yeah.
55.
I'm older, feeling it every day. So
yeah, you're 10 years exactly older than me.
Yep.
And you tell people where you live, because we're going to talk a lot about that.
Oh, okay. Do you want the town or just the state?
Yeah, just give us a state.
Okay. Well, I currently live in Wyoming. Been in this state, I can't believe it. It's been about 17 and a half years since
we moved here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe it. Like every year when I have to put in for my tags, it's been that long. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember you moved from Killeen, Texas, right? So you had a stint in Texas, I remember. How long were you in Texas?
We're in Texas for 9 years. And then just wanted to get back west. Get more, you know, back into the mountains and stuff like that. Not that we didn't love Texas. We, mm-hmm. you know, some of our greatest friends that we still have are from Texas, and we still keep in contact with them, but just wanted to get closer to family. And
did you always plan on moving back, or was it just opportunistic? What did you miss about living out west?
You know, just being around family. I miss the mountains, those kind of things, being able to get out. Honestly, Texas, like I said, we love Texas, but there's just so many people in Texas. I mean, it's crazy. And where we live, you know, 90% of Texas is privately owned. And I didn't hunt I did fish occasionally, just not very often in Texas. Mm-hmm. So I missed that aspect of it. And so just wanted to get back into that environment. And, you know, originally, of course, we're from Utah.
Yeah.
And love Utah, but didn't necessarily want to be back in Utah. So and
nice place to visit.
Yeah, nothing against Utah, but at the time it was kind of weird. So just I'm a school teacher, by the way, and so the school I was teaching in Texas, just the stuff that was going on in there, you know, just fights in the school every day and that kind of stuff, and it's just not somewhere that I wanted to raise my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were just looking different places, and the story is weird, because I actually applied. There was a job that opened up in a little tiny town in Wyoming, and I just sent my resume in, didn't think anything of it, filled out the application, and just really totally forgot about it. And yeah. In August, I was actually in the shower, taking a shower, and my wife says, "Hey, there's a principal in Wyoming that wants to talk to you on the phone." I was like, "What are you talking about?" I had completely forgot. But yeah, this principal called me, and we, in August is kind of a Well, the school district that I left, you know, they were kind of upset about it, but we drove all the way to Wyoming. I interviewed, they offered me a job, and school in Texas was starting that next week, if I remember right, or 2 weeks away. And so I had to tell them I was resigning. And of course they were very upset, and they're like, well, if we can't find somebody else, we're not going to let you out of your contract and blah, 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 blah. And I just said, well, you do what you got to do, but we're leaving. So,
yeah, sometimes you just got to make a move, right?
And thankfully they were able to find somebody, which, so it all worked out, and we moved to Wyoming, Northwest Wyoming. And,
and you moved to a tiny town. I mean, it was really small, and we grew up in a really tiny town.
I think the population is like 328 or 330, something like that. So,
yeah,
but it's an awesome little town. I mean, I really loved it up there. I mean, just the mountains are right there. I mean, we had two lakes within 7-8 miles.
Yeah.
And I remember the first time we moved there, and I took my wife up into the mountains, and she was just crying, basically. So we missed that so much, you know. We used to joke in Texas, you'd drive over an overpass and be like, oh, look, a scenic overlook, you know.
Yeah. So. Yeah, Texas is super, super flat. The thing I remember moving you down to Killeen. I would have been maybe in high school, and I think I can't remember if I drove down with you and then flew back. But I remember flying back out of Austin, and I think my flight that morning was like 4 a.m. maybe. And I think we had to be at the airport by 3. And I remember getting to Austin, and I want to say it was like 102 at like 3 in the morning in Austin. And I remember thinking, holy smokes, I have no idea how he's going to make it down here, because it was just too hot.
It was interesting down there. I mean, I remember one summer we had 40 plus days of 100 plus degree weather.
Yeah.
Oof. I mean, just crazy. Everybody's yards were not, I mean, they were just brown. Everybody quit water, and it was just a waste of water because it didn't do anything. So,
right.
But
yeah, I want to talk more about Wyoming here in a minute, but tell people what it was like where we grew up. Like, what do you remember from Antimony?
You know, it was interesting. This last week, I was watching KSL Outdoors, you know?
Yeah.
And Adam Eichel had been invited down to do a video at Otter Creek. They were doing a fishing tournament, you know? And watching that fishing tournament, you know, when it was done, I told my wife, I says, you know what? Next summer during my winter break, I think I'm going to go down there and rent a cabin. Because when we were there, they had fishing seasons, you know, but you didn't ice fish because of the fishing seasons. I was like, man, I want to go down there and ice fish that lake. We never did that. I don't remember doing it, but I loved it down there. You know, it's a little tiny town. What was there, 150 people?
Yeah.
Our dad, of course, was a park ranger, and so we got to just do all kinds of outdoor stuff. I was just thinking about that last night growing up in Antimony, and you know, before that, even down around Bryce Canyon, you know, that's kind of like maybe where we got into hunting. Our dad's always been a hunter since I've known him, of course, since, you know, growing up. But down around Bryce Canyon, I remember those recurve bows that we would run around with trying to get rabbits. And I don't think we ever got one out there, you know, out there where we live. So,
yeah. We grew up, I mean, we grew up so remote. I mean, our closest neighbor was maybe a mile, and we grew up across the street from a reservoir. So Otter Creek Reservoir. And I remember summers we had the 18-foot metal canoe. You probably still have it.
I do. It's in my shed, in my garage.
And I remember we used to go out and we'd offload that thing. We'd pack it over to the reservoir. We'd throw that thing in the lake. And then we would go out and we would spend the summer, like evenings or mornings, trolling. And we'd just go out. One person would paddle. We would sit in that thing and we would paddle up and down the lake and troll for rainbows. I remember doing that all the time in the summer. I remember swimming in the lake. I mean, you guys grew up trapping, right?
Yeah, we trapped muskrats, and then, of course, our dad had beaver traps. And we did that. I can't remember how many years we did that, 3 or 4 years, something, maybe more when we were in high school. I remember getting up early in the morning before school, and down behind the house, was that a stream or river, whatever, a canal, something like that. We'd run down and check our muskrat traps in the morning. And then when we get home from school, we'd go down there again and check those, check the beaver traps. And I remember we would bring those muskrats home and had that little shed next to the house. And we'd sit in there and skin those out, get them on the boards, get them dried out. And then we would send those. Our grandpa lived in Indiana, and they were getting a good price for muskrats in Indiana. And we'd box those up and ship them off to him. And it was a lot of cold mornings, I remember.
What time in the morning would you guys have to get up to go check traps?
I think we were like 5 a.m. or something. We were
5 a.m. up. How many traps? Do you remember how many traps you guys were running?
I don't even remember.
Quite a few.
Yeah. And so we did that. We did that and made some money. And then I remember the price for muskrats just tanked. So the fur price tanked. And so just didn't do it. But
I remember being really little, and I don't ever remember going and checking traps, but I remember just like all the fleshing boards, you know, you guys would have those all lined out and stretched, and you guys would be out there fleshing hides and drying hides.
Yep. Fleshing hides, and had those boards you'd stretch the skins over.
Yeah.
And hang them out, dry them out. Yep. Yeah. Did that a lot. And then we always let Dad do the beavers. So they were big. But that was interesting. Yeah. And the fishing on the canoe, we loved doing that. You know, I remember going out with Dad all the time in that canoe and just trolling really slow across that lake. And I kind of feel, you know, ripped off a little bit because the fish at that time, I mean, you're lucky if you caught 12, 14 inch or, you know, little ones. Mm-hmm. And now that lake, they're catching 4, 5, 6, 7 pounders, you know. Some big old fish in that lake. And it was just fun in the summer, too. Remember, we go down below the dam, fish down below the dam. That was fun. We had motorcycles. We'd ride those motorbikes all over the place. And, of course, we'd go rabbit hunting all the time.
Yeah. I remember every Thanksgiving, around Thanksgiving Day, and it seemed like we always had a ton of snow on the ground. That's one thing that's definitely changed. I mean, yesterday here in Cedar where I live, which isn't that far from where we grew up, it was, you know, mid-60s, and we've had no snow. But I remember when we were kids, it seemed like we had snow all winter long. And it seemed like every Thanksgiving at least. And we rabbit hunted a ton. I remember you guys put a hurting on the local marmot population pretty good.
Oh yeah. The marmots. Yeah. I remember that. I don't think you were with us. Me and our oldest brother, remember, went down to the river down below the house that one day and found a hole with marmots in it. And they just kept crawling out of there. And boy, we just laid them out. I don't know how many we got out of that hole. That was That was a fun day, you know.
we grew up pretty feral, huh? Didn't we? I mean, Mom and Dad just let us roam.
Yeah, well, I mean, where we lived, I mean, you could afford to do that. So it was just fun. We just did all kinds of stuff, and hiking in the mountains. And it's funny, you know, this last year we bought a house, and one of the things that I enjoy the most, because we got a fireplace, my wife thinks I'm nuts, but I'm like, you know what? I've really missed going out in the mountains and getting firewood.
Oh, yeah.
So I went, made 6 or 7 trips this last summer, just going up in the mountains, chainsawing and getting firewood. Man, I loved it. Looking forward to it again. So
for sure.
Doing all those kinds of things. But
absolutely. My father-in-law, when he had his health a little bit more, that was like his favorite thing in the world. And I remember him telling me, he's like, man, I don't know if there's a better feeling in the whole world than a brand new chain, you know, super sharp. And you lay that thing on a piece of aspen, nice dried out aspen, and, you know, start cutting firewood. And he still has got this giant firewood pile that he maintains. He's got this big log fence out back that's all firewood. But yeah, that was one thing. I don't have a fireplace in my house, but I remember that too. I remember going out and getting firewood, and we had firewood there in the house. And Mom always hated all the ashes. I remember that. She'd throw a big fit about what the mess that would make.
Yeah. But yeah, we literally this winter have had a fire almost every night. And I got a couple cords this last summer, and of course, my wife's like, I think we've got too much. And I was like, yeah, we'll see. And I think we've got about a fourth of that left, you know, now. So,
yeah. Dad always hunted. What were your earliest memories of dad going out hunting? Because the way, I mean, I've told the story and I don't know, it's probably just dad passing it down to me, but I remember dad always saying that he would, like, he looked forward to it every year, that he would take like 10 years or 10 days a year and he would go out and he'd go bow hunting. Do you remember dad going out bow hunting? Do you remember hunting with dad?
I do. One of my earliest memories, of course, was the antelope hunt. I remember he drew an antelope tag there in John's Valley. And I remember that summer going out and scouting, climbing up on a hill. I remember he was there and Todd was there. And I remember watching two bucks down below us fighting. Mm-hmm. Were you there? I don't remember.
No, I don't remember that. I remember it coming home. I remember you guys bringing it home. I remember him putting it in the front yard and taking some photos. And I probably could dig some up if I looked, just some old, you know, Polaroids or whatever of him with an antelope in the front yard.
Yeah, check. I think I sent that same picture. Not the picture in the yard, but I sent the one of, we watched it. I remember that we went out, we hunted a lot. Remember we had that yellow Subaru and that was our hunting wagon. And I remember the day we got that antelope, we were just out cruising. It was raining and just spotted that buck off the road a couple hundred yards and it was raining. I remember and dad got out and shot it, but cleaned it out. And I remember putting that thing on top of the Subaru, that yellow Subaru. I think I put that in one of our group chats, that picture at the yellow Subaru, me and Todd with that antelope on top. Soaking wet, dragging that thing, and that's probably the antelope that we brought home. That mom, after that, she's just like, I don't like antelope.
So yeah,
I don't like eating antelope.
Didn't he try to like pit barbecue that and ended up burning a lot of it?
Could have been.
I was trying to remember one of those. I remember he decided he was going to try the whole pit barbecue, and he dug a hole. And he went through the whole process. And I remember at one point, it seems like he left it in too long and we burned quite a bit of it. I can't remember if it was an antelope or not.
It could have been. Could have been that one. But I remember that. And I just remember, you know, because of school, him elk hunting, I remember, he would take a week off and he would just run up in the mountain by himself and spend the week out there. And I don't remember him ever getting an elk with his bow, but he would always come home with lots of stories of how close he got to them and all those. He just loved it. Looked forward to it. And then I remember, you know, in the canyon there hiking up one year, I think he had a deer tag, and me and him and Todd hiked clear to the top. And I don't think we saw deer, but I remember we saw big, big bull elk up there. Tucked up under the top in the canyon, and that was fun. So
there's a couple stories that you relate to that I remember specifically with you. I remember we went out on the boulder one time on a deer hunt, and it seems like all we did back then was like deer drives, right? So we would kind of line out and hike, or we would put somebody like on a point, and you know, he would send the boys kind of doing a deer push. And I remember I was with dad and we'd made this loop and it seemed like you were, you know, kind of to the east of us and you were kind of paralleling us, and we were got out ahead of you. And we got up on this little knob and I remember dad saying that he could see a buck that was coming up towards us. And I remember him saying it was the biggest buck he'd ever seen. He's like, it points everywhere. He's like, I have no idea how big that thing was or what it would score, you know, now, but I remember him just being so excited. I remember he got a dead rest on this rock, and I remember him getting the buck in the crosshairs, and I kept waiting for him to shoot, and I had my ears plugged. And I remember him saying, oh, I can't shoot because I don't know where Tyler is. And I remember thinking, man, just shoot it, because it was really close. I think it was like 80 or 100 yards, you know. And he didn't shoot that buck. He let it walk because he was worried about where you were in relation to that buck. And then it seems like we tried to get back on it, but I remember him he'll still tell the story like that was probably the biggest buck he'd ever seen. I'd love to have seen that buck. I don't remember ever actually getting eyes on it, but I remember that. We kind of linked back up, but I remember that happening. And then I want to say it was you. We were going up on the Beaver one day and we had a buck run across the road and you jumped out of the car and took off after it. And it seems like you took a crack at it or two and missed it.
I missed. I remember that 4-point buck just cruising across. And, you know, growing up there, it's weird. I hunted, but I never got a big game animal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember. I never did.
Yeah, I didn't either. The first buck I killed, I think I was 16, and it was a 2-point, and I was with Dad, but I don't remember. I remember Dad and Todd coming home with a couple of big 4-points. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Were you with them?
I don't remember. Probably.
I remember them going hunting. I remember everybody kind of going hunting, but I don't often remember him coming back with animals.
Yeah, I mean, I remember hunt, you know, we would go down to Pine Valley and hunt with our uncles, you know, and I remember hiking up hills and sitting, but I don't remember ever bringing anything home. I remember one winter, I don't know if you were with us or not. Uncle Mann's, I believe, had an elk tag on Fish Lake.
Yep.
And we had that camper up there and it was like 15-30 below or something. We drove around. I don't think we even got out of the truck.
Yeah.
It's so cold.
Yeah.
It was fun.
I always remember coming home from the deer hunt. We'd be driving back and it seemed like it was the same time of year that like playoff baseball was on. So like the World Series might be on. And I remember we would listen to the World Series games on AM radio and we'd be coming home. And for some reason, we always had Subarus.
Yeah. Yeah. We beat them up too. I remember that.
Yeah.
You beat one up, I remember. So.
Oh, yeah. I put one in a canal.
Which, you know, brought back some memories this last week. I didn't send you pictures, but so hopefully she's asleep, but she drove her car into a ditch this last week. So.
Oh, no.
Luckily, it wasn't hurt. It was fine. The neighbors were able to help us pull it out with a skid steer, but.
Gotcha.
Brought back memories. I was like, oh, yeah, I remember.
Yeah, I was 14 and I was the youngest of five. And I think by the time I got to, you know, 12, 14, mom and dad were sick of driving me around because everywhere we went, it was, you know, probably 20 minutes at least. I mean, the closest grocery store was an hour, right? And so I remember mom taught me to drive when I was 12. So I drove a stick shift. It was like a little Isuzu pup stick. And then I think by the time I was 14, she pretty well just turned me loose and said, you can drive yourself back and forth to school. And so mom and dad were out of town one time and I thought, I'm going to go to a high school dance. So I picked up a friend and we drove to Junction. And right. on the way back, Marty Gleave, who was the cop in town, he was parked off the side of the road and I thought, I want to try to avoid him. So I took a dirt road, like a side road, and I just took it way too fast and hit some fishtails on those washboards and ended up overcorrecting and launching it into a canal. And that was a gold super. It was Dukes of Hazzard style. I launched that thing right into the canal.
Yeah. You know, and just so your listeners know, back in those times, where we lived in that farming community, I mean, kids were driving like super young. So it wasn't a.
Marty, when he came, he got a wrecker there to help pull the car out of the canal. And he come up and he asked me if I had a driver's license. And I said, no, I'm only 14. And I remember him looking like, what in the world? And he's like, I've been watching you drive back and forth to school forever. And he's like, I had no idea you were only 14.
Yeah, but I mean, all the kids back then had driving long before they had licenses. I mean, they pretty much it was a necessity. So,
do you look back on the way we grew up pretty fondly? Like, was it the best way to grow up in your mind?
Obviously, yeah, and you know, it's another reason I wanted to get out of Texas because I wanted my kids to kind of have the same experiences. Opportunities that I did, you know, and it's just interesting, you know, my daughter now is in Oklahoma City and the people that she associates with and hangs out with, just she'll tell them, oh yeah, my dad's a hunter. He likes to hunt bears and, you know, an elk and deer and he butchers them himself. And she says they kind of look at her like she's got a third eye, you know, cause they have they have no clue what any of that's about, you know. And I definitely look on that. I wouldn't trade it for the world, you know.
Yeah.
Trade that for the world. It was awesome. It was awesome. And we had those big fields behind our house, getting up there, you know, and seeing the deer out there. And that one morning, remember, we had two bull elk literally in our backyard that one morning.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember standing there at that back door, which was a glass sliding glass door at the back, and seeing those two bull elk in the backyard just hanging out.
Yeah. I mean, it was awesome. I loved it. So.
Yeah.
Getting out hiking all the time, just pretty much doing whatever we wanted, like you said. So,
I feel extremely fortunate to have grown up the way that we did. I mean, we were really disconnected from a lot of things, pretty sheltered, and just had all the opportunity in the world to be in the outdoors. And I remember just roaming. I mean, I'd come home from school, just like you, grab the recurve bow. And I remember just roaming around out back through miles of sagebrush and down the river and fishing. And I don't know, I feel extremely grateful, but then I also feel a little bit of guilt because I mean, I live in Cedar City now and we don't live, you know, it's not rural by any means and it's not really that big of a city, but it's definitely not the same type of opportunity that you and I had when I was a kid. So I also feel a little bit of guilt that I don't get my own kids out nearly as much as I should.
Yeah. You know, and growing up, yeah, it's hard not to talk about the dogs that we had and stuff, you know, love those dogs.
Yeah.
Just, you know, people, our dad tried to raise a couple of redbone hounds and stories are legendary about those dogs. So.
Rocky and Rosie.
Yeah. I mean, it was, yeah. Just don't.
Did he ever hunt those? Do you ever remember hunting
those? He never did. Remember, he was hoping to breed them and to raise some pups and sell them. And I remember he did try to train them, but he eventually ended up selling them. I think he sold Rocky to a guy that actually turned out to be a pretty good lion dog from what I remember. And then Rosie, I don't know what happened to her, but
yeah. Grandpa Miller always had hounds, right? And he ran
coons. Yeah, hunted raccoons with them. And of course our daddy tells stories about coon hunting. So does mom with, you know, grandpa out coon hunting in Indiana. So
yeah. Yeah. No, it was good. It was a good childhood. You've got kids. Was it important to you? Did you make like a concerted effort to like get your kids outdoors and into hunting? And was it important to you that they hunted, or was it just like what you did and what you do?
Well, it was interesting. When I moved to Wyoming, I didn't really realize how much the hunting culture is ingrained in Wyoming. I mean, pretty much you find somebody that doesn't hunt in Wyoming, that's kind of an anomaly.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like yesterday, I was listening to sessions of, you know, state representatives and stuff. They're debating some raising the fee applications yesterday. Yeah. But even those guys talked about hunting and how important it is to them and their families. And so when we moved to Wyoming, and I quickly learned that hunting was just a big deal in Wyoming, and people hunt. A lot of people, you know, of course, there's a lot of farmers and ranchers that in Wyoming, but a lot of people will hunt, especially for elk, to put that meat in the freezer for the winter. And so, of course, it took a year to get residency in Wyoming. And my wife, even though now she kind of complains that hunting season, I'm gone every weekend, you know, that's just what I do. Yeah. But one Christmas, I remember that she bought me my first rifle, a 270 short mag. And so I put in for some permits, and the first big game animal I got in Wyoming was a cow elk. Got permission on some guys' properties up there where I lived. And
did you take your boys with you?
I did have my boys with me. And I remember, I don't know if you remember, but I remember we hiked in there one day and we were just making tons of noise. You know, we hadn't seen any elk at all. And we hike up, we sit there most of the day. Then in the evening, we're walking around this stand of pine trees, just making tons of noise. didn't think there was any elk in there at all. And we come around the bottom of that, and all of a sudden all these cows come shooting out of this stand of trees with a nice 6-point bull elk. And we were just like, you know, Chinese fire drill running all over the damn place. You know? I never did get a shot that, but I remember I called you and I was like, do you think those elk will be back in that same area? And you told me go back in a week and just slowly sneak through there. And so sure enough, the next week on a Saturday, we sneaking back through that same stand of trees. And I remember looking up and there was a cow probably 30, 40 yards ahead of us. And of course they spooked, but I was able to get in position and get one.
Mm-hmm.
So that was fun. That was cool. Yeah. And that kind of got us going.
Yeah.
So
your boys still hunt, right? Both of them.
Of course my oldest is in Utah and he's having a lot of difficulty getting licenses. It's
not as easy.
So, he wants to, I just don't think he's been since he's been in Utah. Just
sure.
And I've told him, of course, hey, get a spike tag, get this, get that. Yeah. I just don't know if he has, but my second son, Jonah, pretty much. Yeah. Every year he'll go with me. This last year he had a type one tag in an area. And so that was a lot of fun. And that's something that I enjoy more than me getting an animal is going out with them and watching them be successful. I just really love that. I mean, when in Wyoming, since we lived in Wyoming, almost every hunt that I'd go on, I would try to have them with me. I mean, get them outdoors and get them out in the hills and whether it was deer or antelope or elk or whatever, you know. So, yeah, I know my oldest son, when he graduates school, because he's going to school down there in Cedar City, he really would like to move back
to
Wyoming, because Wyoming residents, as you know, we have it pretty nice. Pretty nice. I mean, you can hunt every dang year in Wyoming. There's no reason why you can't. So,
yeah. Yeah, it's we talk all the time, and I don't know how many times, probably I've said it ad nauseum, but I would love to move to Wyoming. I see every year I talk to you and you've probably got 4 or 5 tags of some sort, and you've probably spent, you know, $200 or something total.
And yeah,
you know, I'm out of pocket that much in application fees in one state, you know, and then if I draw a tag someplace, you know, I'm way more above and beyond that. But I was looking the other day. So Utah, I live in Utah. The only things I can even apply for in my home state this coming year are bison and limited entry deer, because I'm on a waiting period for elk. I'm on a waiting period for antelope. I was in the dedicated hunter program, killed 2 deer in 3 years. So I can't apply for general season deer. So really, like, the only species I can even apply for in my home state are like bison, which I won't draw. The odds are just astronomical. And then, you know, limited entry deer, which again, the odds are just insane. So it's like, there's a really good likelihood that I probably won't even have a tag in my home state for 3 to 4 years after this. So it's
tough. I mean, in Wyoming, like every year for elk, I put in, of course, for a type one tag, but then second choice tags are pretty hard to draw. So I usually just throw a general as my second choice. And I mean, you can go buy those over the counter as a Wyoming resident for deer and elk. So,
yeah,
and there's a lot of good areas. So,
yeah, you, of all of us, so all of us hunt now, except for our sister, Jewel, I guess she's never been. You hunt, Todd hunts, Tracy hunts. He's more recently into it, probably within the last couple of years. He's killed a couple cow elk. He's had a bull tag and he's been out, you know, hunting bears as well. But I would say of the, you know, the four of us, the boys, I think you probably get out more than any of us. You're one of the individuals, like, you know, a social media follow. Every time I see a post from you, it's like you're out ice fishing, you're out hiking, you do backpacking trips. You guys have backpacked all over, you know, Wyoming. You go to national parks. It seems like you're always watching the elk refuge. You get out a lot, but like, why? Like, what is it in you that you like? What do you love about it?
Another reason I love Wyoming, I guess. No offense to Utah, but I've been to Utah, family reunions, you know, this and that, you know, hey, let's go on a hike. mm-hmm. and you're hiking and on the trail. I mean, you're stepping off the trail constantly for other people. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm a solitary individual.
We all are. What is that?
I don't know. But like, even now, my job, I teach online school. So I'm at home mm-hmm. by myself all day long. And I love it. I don't know. I love getting out. There's something, I don't know, brings peace to my soul. It may sound cheesy to people. I don't know, but I don't think so. Just the opportunities that are around me. Mm-hmm. Like I said, part of the reason is I'm at home all day, all week, you know? So on the weekends, I'm like, man, I got to get out of here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I just, in the summers, I love going out and just hiking. And there's just so many places I know of. I mean, there's places in Wyoming, obviously, that you're going to go and you're going to run into a ton of people. Mm-hmm. A couple of years ago, me and my son and some other friends of ours hiked what's called the Cirque of the Towers. Mm-hmm. And the Continental Divide Trail goes through there, but it is so popular. I mean, there was tons of people on the trail hiking that, but just incredibly beautiful country. And I don't regret doing that at all, but there are places that I know of that I can go and I know that I will not see a single person. I mean, I could be there for a couple of weeks and I wouldn't see it anybody at all.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know. And then in the spring, just spring bear hunting, I got into that about 6-7 years ago. And man, I love it. My wife doesn't. That's the one thing I hunt that she does not understand. She does not enjoy. She was just like, man, the gas money you're spending. And yeah. We had this conversation just the other day because I'm prepping, you know, for bear season. And she's like, man, the money you spend on gas. And I'm like, you know, it's during elk season and deer season, antelope season, I'm spending the same money.
Yeah.
You know, going out on weekends. So
yeah.
And you know, baiting bears is just such a labor uh-huh. of love, I guess. You, it's so much work. And I'm just grateful in Wyoming that you have the opportunity to bait bears, because, you know, where I'm hunting bears, you're not going to see them. Yeah. It is so thick. And so I just love going out there and even sitting on a bait, you know, many times I've sat many times and never seen a dang thing, but it's just being there, mm-hmm. being in the outdoors, being in the open. Especially like where I hunt bears, there's no cell service out there. Mm-hmm. And I just love it. So you're not connected to the outside world at all. Of course, mm-hmm. I have my DeLorme in case I have issues with anything at all, but just sitting with your own thoughts mm-hmm. and just thinking. And I just think it's a lost art. So many people just are afraid to be by themselves anymore.
I think it's uncomfortable for people, right? And myself included. I mean, given the fact that I've got a, you know, computer in my pocket at all times, and if I get bored, I can pick that thing up and I can scroll social media, or, you know, I can watch YouTube, or I can do whatever I want. There's like this uncomfortable feeling of like not having anything to do, just to like sit with your own thoughts. And I think it's becoming increasingly harder because we are so distracted. Like, we can find entertainment anytime we want. So I think there's a lot of people, I mean, you and I are old enough now that like, we remember what it was like. And most of our life, actually, I guess we never had that, right? We did things like this, and that's what we did. So I think we were a little bit more used to it.
And I have, you know, and so bear hunting is one of my passions. And then something else I love doing is hunting antelope in Wyoming. Mm-hmm. And I do it. I sit in a blind at a waterhole.
Yeah.
You know? And I've got so many friends that are just like, I can't do that. I can't sit on a bear bait. I can't sit in a water hole. I got to be doing something all the time. And I'm like, and one of the things I love, I mean, you know, and one of the things I love about sitting water for antelope is, you know, and I've got to the point now where I'll take a camera mm-hmm. and there are so many, like Wyoming, there's so many arid regions with, you know, sagebrush, and it's just amazing to me. You're sitting on a waterhole. How many animals, wildlife, birds use those waterholes? You know, I mean, before I was like, oh, it's probably just antelope. But I've put in trail cameras on waterholes. I've got pictures of bobcats, mm-hmm. geese, coyotes, all kinds of different birds, you know, sandhill cranes. I mean, just all kinds of wildlife use those. And it's just amazing. As you know, you're out there sitting, and I just like those antelope, because you don't, especially if you're bow hunting antelope, spot and stalk. I mean, kudos to those guys that want to go out and spot and stalk antelope, you know. They do like, I don't know, tons of spot and stalk. You just don't get close to those things. It's so difficult. And so to really be close and up personal with an antelope, a water hole is the way to go. Like I said, I mean, I've gotten to the point where I just, I mean, my last buck antelope tag I had, I scouted most of the summer and finally found a buck that I wanted to chase. And then I spent quite a bit of time trying to figure out where's he going to get water. And I knew there was a water hole about a mile from where I'd usually see him. And so I would go out in the afternoons. I kind of figured out, like driving by there, I would see him coming out of there in the afternoons, but I never saw him actually on the water hole. So I went out and spent one whole afternoon about a mile away watching this water hole, and these bucks came in and watered, and then I drove around, and sure enough, it was him. I was like, cool, there's my water hole, you know?
Yeah.
And that was one of my funnest hunts I think ever I've had hunting antelope. So I put that blind out there on that water hole, and it was, I was a little bit nervous because you could see the water hole. You could see my blind from the road.
Yep.
I mean, it was only about a mile from the road. And this stinking buck I was chasing, every time I saw him, he was literally a couple hundreds off the road. And he was really cool. You know, I've told you this story, but he didn't curl back. He curled forward.
Yep.
And I was like, just a really cool buck. And so, that water hole, I sat three or four times and he never came in. The day I got him, though, it was just kind of weird. I snuck in there in the morning in the dark and climbed in there. And it was weird because I remember peeking out the back of my blind and I saw a guy about 600-700 yards out there. And I'm like, what in the heck are they doing? And then I saw another guy and I was just watching. I'm like, what in the world are they doing? I mean, I know they see my blind down here.
Yeah. Were they hunting?
They were hunting antelope. And I know it's, it's probably, I know it's illegal in Wyoming. I don't, not 100% sure they were doing this, but I saw those two guys pushing inwards and
trying to corral buck a little bit.
Yeah, he was trying to push. And I figured they were trying to push these bucks. They were in a group of five, six of them usually, but they were trying to push him. I think to somebody else that was stationed back up in there, but
right.
Those bucks came squirting out in between those guys. And I was like, oh, great. There goes my day.
Yeah.
Those antelope just, huh?
I was going to say, what do you do in your, those long sits?
I take a book. Like I said, I read books, take my camera. And a lot of times, you know, you're sitting there and those antelope will come in and get some pretty good pictures of antelope where they're coming in or watching birds or just whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I don't have a problem. I can sit all day long. It doesn't bother me at all. That's how I am. You know, and I peek, make little holes in the blind and peek out.
Yeah.
And watch. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is in us. I'm the same way. And I look forward to it. The older I get, the more I like it. I look forward to that, like probably as much or more than any other hunt that I do every year, just to sit in a blind on a water hole and watch antelope come in and read a book. And just be alone with my thoughts and just spend time thinking and reading. I look forward to that every year. It's the best.
It's you know,
and the best breakaway from everyday life.
When you climb in there in the morning and the sun's just coming up and you start blasting and you're like, oh, there's some antelope. There's some antelope. And just the suspense of waiting to see if they're coming in, when they're coming in. It's just, I love it.
I want to hear the end of your story. So you had these two guys that were pushing this buck.
Yeah, so those antelope busted out and they were hauling butt last time I see them, and they looped clear back around, and I was thought my day was over. And I sat there probably 30, 45 minutes, and I just happened to glance out to my left, and here comes these bucks over the hill. And I was like, oh man, here we come.
Yeah.
And just watching them. And I've gotten to the point, and I've gotten so many antelope with my bow that I really don't get shaky or excited. But I just watched those bucks. They kind of disappeared around a little rise. And then just happened to look up, and here come the buck that I was after. He was the first one in, and he came in 25 yards. And I made an absolute terrible shot because for some reason I was just shaking, nervous, scared. And I don't know if he jumped my string or not. He may have done that, but I shot him and hit him literally right in front of the hind leg. And I was like, oh, crap. An antelope, a lot of times, if you gut shoot them, they'll go out a couple hundred yards and bed down, and you can sneak back in on them. But this one took off, and he went up on this little hill, and he laid down. And I'm calling my son. I'm like, hey, you know, I just shot this buck. And it was funny because I had my rangefinder, and I was trying to range over there where he was, and my battery died on my rangefinder.
Oh, man. That's the worst.
I was like, oh, great. What do I do, you know? So I called my son. I said, hey, I've got another rangefinder. Can you run it out here? I'm going to have to go get this buck. And on his way out, I was just like, because I looked at that hill, I could see his horns for a while, but then they disappeared. I thought he got up and walked off. And after 20, 30 minutes of sitting there, I was like, I'm going to get out and go check. I can probably figure out how close he is. And went up on the hill, and he was dead.
Yeah.
I hit an artery, so lucky me. Lucky
I've
me.
Seen that. I've seen that happen before. I've seen antelope, same thing. I've seen them die awful quick. They bleed out fast.
But I was over the moon with that buck, and
it was
funny because my wife says, no, you cannot get a mount of that buck, you know. And I usually do Euro mounts, and by the time I got home, she's like, you know, you can get that. Let's put that buck on the wall, and so I didn't save the cape.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't save the cape. But luckily, the taxidermist had one in his freezer, and so he's on my mounted. Way. Yeah.
I've never mounted an antelope, but it's on – eventually I'd like to. I've got some good bucks, but I would love to – I think they're incredible animals. I mean, I think they're one of the prettiest animals on the landscape in the West.
Yeah, I love them. Since I've lived in Wyoming, I absolutely love hunting antelope. And, you know, it's still – in Wyoming, I talk to people all the time. They're like, oh, I haven't drawn an antelope tag in 5 to 6 years. And I'm like, last year literally is the first year I didn't draw an antelope tag in 17 years been in Wyoming. And I'm like, there are areas that may be hard to hunt, but you could literally draw a tag every single year.
Yeah. You just have to understand how the system works, right? And yeah, know what
You're not looking for them. So,
but. So something I wanted to ask you this, something I've always, I've admired about you is that you, for lack of a better way to explain it, you seem to have like no fear. You'll go places on your own. You'll hunt on your own all the time, which I do a lot of solo hunting too, but you hunt a lot in brand new areas. Like you'll strike out in a new country that you've never been to. You'll figure it out how to get there. You'll hike into it. You'll hunt it. You hunt in grizzly country a lot. You hunt in grizzly country on your own a lot. A question I get asked all the time is, you know, people ask me, you know, or they'll express concern, like, I'm afraid to hunt in grizzly country. How do you handle that? Do you have any tips or tricks that you could give people on advice of hunting in grizzly country or overcoming their fears to strike out in a new country?
No, it's funny. I do have friends that are like scared to death of bears, honestly. But to me, I don't know. I figure if I get attacked and I mean, it's my time to go. I don't know.
That's what I figure. I've said this before on video. If I get mauled and killed by a bear, I mean, what a cool story that my kids get to tell.
I mean, there is some really incredible hunting in bear country. I mean, there just is. And tip for me, I would say education. I mean, I educate myself about, I have studied, I've watched videos. You know, what do you do in bear country? I mean, how do you use this? What do you do? What do you look for? And I educate myself about, I mean, I try to be prepared for any kind of situation. I mean, you can't plan, obviously. There's stuff that happens while you're out there. And have I seen grizzly bears while I've been out hunting? Yeah, I have. I mean, it's not like all the time. I'm not seeing bears every single time that I go. And I'm just cautious. I'm careful. I mean, even last year, I decided I was going to go elk hunting. I took a couple of days off, and I was going to go into an area that I know has lots of grizzly bears. And sure enough, I hiked up in the morning, and I saw some elk. And I'm like, I'm going to try to get closer. And I'm hiking this trail, trying to get closer to them, and look down. I'm like, oh, there's grizzly bear tracks on this same trail from this morning, you know? Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a deterrent. I didn't keep going. I turned around.
Yeah, it was just smart.
And then going out the back way, I started going back on the same trail. I started noticing more grizzly trail or tracks. And then there were smaller grizzly tracks. And I was like, oh, that's a sow with a cub. I don't want to be in here. I don't want to run into a sow and a cub. Yeah. So, and the important part is just to keep your head on a swivel and pay attention to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Of course, they advise don't hunt in grizzly bear country alone. But mm-hmm. I found hunting, like if I wait for somebody to go with me, I might be waiting for a very long time. So,
right. Do you remember when you first moved up there? Was it intimidating to you? And has it gotten easier over time?
I think it's gotten easier. And honestly, it's not to me. It's just not intimidating. I don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not going to stay home just because there's a bear out there in the forest. You know, it's not. And someday, you know, I have friends tell me, you know, someday you're going to get hit. Someday you're going to get mauled, attacked. And I'm like, possibly. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah.
Have I had like really close encounters with the grizzly bear? Not to this point. Mm-hmm. You know, thank heavens. I'm not going to stay home just because there's a bear out there in the forest. And you do a lot of glassing. You know, if you mm-hmm. see, I remember hunting once, dad was with me. And my oldest son, we'd hiked up to where we'd seen some elk in the morning, and we sat there all day hoping they'd pop out in the evening. And I remember glassing across the valley, and just across the valley, there's this big open sagebrush area. And I remember I told dad, I said, you want to see a grizzly bear? Look right over there in the middle of that sagebrush patch. Mm-hmm. And there's a big bear, big old grizzly in there feeding across. And just like 15 minutes before, we'd seen two guys hike right over the, right down through that. And so dad's like, we were going to hike down, and that bear was kind of headed down into the valley. Mm-hmm. And of course, dad's like, well, we're not going down there. I'm like, we're not going to go down there. So we had to hike. He had to hike an extra 3 or 4 miles all the way around. But so you got to be careful.
Yeah.
I just don't worry about it. People do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's, you know, to each their own. If you don't want to hunt bear country, don't do it. So.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people that would like to. They're kind of overcome with the what ifs, you know. And I think that's the thing, is you can build the what ifs up in your mind that you can talk yourself out of it, you know, the what if, and eventually you're just like, yeah, it's too much, I can't even do it. But I think you're right. I mean, I've hunted a few times, I guess, in bear country. I've hunted with you, you know, in Wyoming, and we've hunted in some bear country, and I've hunted Alaska. I think it's just, it's a matter of like being taking precautions and being, you know, prepared and planned out, like what would I do and how am I going to handle a situation, keeping your head on a swivel, just being like that much more cognizant of like your surroundings and what's around you. And I think it's being smart. It's like you said, if you're hiking up a trail and you're running onto sow and cub tracks or tracks, I mean, you know, take the time to hike out around it. Just find something else, you know?
Yeah. And I don't want to get into the firearm versus bear spray debate.
Yeah.
You know, cause everybody's got their opinion. I personally carry bear spray with me, but even that, I have educated myself. Every year Game and Fish, they'll have a day where they give away free bear spray. Mm-hmm. But you go and you can practice using, they don't have bear spray in the bottle, but it's, you know, like water or something like that. But they have this mechanical bear, this remote control bear. And
yeah,
like you turn your back to it and then they'll yell bear, bear, bear. And you have to turn around and aim and fire that thing uh-huh. at the bear, you know, so you practice. Like I said, it's education. You educate yourself, you practice.
Yeah.
And it's just funny, the people with firearms, like, oh, I'm not going into bear country without a pistol, but they never practice with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can tell you firsthand. So when I was in Alaska on that moose hunt, we had that grizzly charges, and my buddy ended up shooting it from probably 16, 18 yards, I would guess, by the time he actually pulled the trigger. But it was full tilt, full charge, you know, ears pinned back. I didn't have a sidearm at the time. I didn't have bear spray. I'd left my pack. I had my bow in my hand. And then, you know, my buddy's got the rifle and he's with me, which I figured was good enough. But point being, like, the thing I remember was that happened so quickly. That bear went from maybe 80 to 100 yards to 16 yards when he pulled the trigger. It happened so quick. And I remember thinking immediately after, there's almost no chance that I could have hit that bear with a pistol.
So if you have a pistol thinking you're going to take that into bear country, but you haven't practiced with it a lot, you might as well leave it at home.
Yeah.
Because they, the one thing you know about bears is they are fast.
I couldn't believe how fast that bear was. And I couldn't believe just how quick it happened and it developed. It was like, I can't even put it into words. It was so quick and just so just intense. I remember thinking immediately after, like, there's no way I would have been able to get a gun on that thing and pull the trigger. There's just no way.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not just grizzly bears. I mean, black bears, even with black bears, I don't get, I've had experiences. Well, even a year or so ago, we had this sow come in, me and a friend. And she literally at one point took off running. She was coming up the hill straight at us. I mean, and they're so fast. Even black bears have just, they cover some ground.
Yeah.
And I just sat there. I was like, oh, here she comes, you know. But my friend is with me, jumps up. There's a bear. She's coming. Grab your gun. And I was like, and she ran right by us about 10 yards, you know. And he was like, hey, why didn't you jump up with your gun? I was like, first of all, I knew that bear probably was not going to come at us because she had no idea that we were even there. I mean, exciting experience. I tell you what, man.
Yeah. Get the blood pumping, huh?
It is. And that's one of the reasons I just, you know, we haven't talked a little bit about bear hunting, but black bear hunting, I just love baiting. My bait is in an area where you just don't see them until they're right at the bait. But that's just one animal that just really, for some reason, they'll come into the bait, you see them, and your heart just automatically starts to do. And you know they're not going to, there's just a very slim chance that they're going to come after you.
Yeah.
But they could if they wanted. You know, I've told people, one of the reasons I like, it's like hunting Freddy Krueger out in the woods, you know. if they wanted to.
There is something to... I love baiting too. I've only had the opportunity to do it a few times in Utah, primarily with a buddy that drew a tag. But for people that are interested in baiting, it is it's a ton of work. Like, it is so much work. You're constantly out there. You're burning fuel. You're getting bait. You're getting, you know, everything set up and get it going. But I found it like really enjoyable. Like, and I can't explain exactly why. I remember. I think the thing I really like about baiting and then sitting on a bait is that you just very rarely see black bears anyway, like just in general. Yeah. And then, I don't know, there's something about being that close to those animals as they come walking in and they're so quiet. I mean, you can be sitting there so close and all of a sudden there's just a bear at the bait. And it's just fascinating to sit and watch a bear.
It is, you know, and last year was a pretty good year for me as far as, because the year before that we had tons of snow and just, I did not have, for some reason, just didn't have a lot of bears come in and they just, I think I missed one that year. And then after I missed one, they just all disappeared. But last year was a lot drier and bear hunting, you know, if it's windy, if it's raining, I mean, they're just, you know, you'll have people tell you, oh yeah, you know, sit when it's raining, they'll come in. But I've just never, they just don't, especially if it's windy, they don't. I mean, they really like warm, sunny days is your best opportunity. But even, you know, and I've watched a lot of people and they're like, you know, evening is your best time to kill a black bear. And I'm like, you know what? We've killed 5 or 6 on my bait and probably half of them have been in the morning. Mm-hmm. And the biggest one that we killed was in the morning. As you know, my son Jonah one morning, that one scored, had a 20 5/16 skull. So it was just a big bear. I have no idea how much it weighed. I mean, it taped out at 6'8". I just remember, we couldn't move that thing. It was ginormous. That was a day that I will always remember, is that that bear came in and it literally laid down next to the bait, and all we could see was his head. There was a big log in front of his body, and he laid there for 25 minutes. And so I'm constantly checking the wind, you know. Mm-hmm. I knew if the wind turned and blew down there, he'd be gone. But I just kept telling my son, "You've got to shoot this bear. You got to shoot him. He's huge."
Did you know that bear? Did you know how big he was?
And that's one I don't know if I ever had on my trail camera or not. It might be the first time he showed up, or I don't know, but
wow.
I just remember my son Jonah going like, "Oh, I shoot him in the head." I'm like, "No, don't do that. Let's wait." It was funny. He finally stood up and he shot him. And with bears, it's interesting. Like I said, you shoot them, and sometimes they'll give you the death moan, you know.
Yep.
And when you hear the death moan, you're like, "Oh yeah, they're done." But most of the time, they don't. So it's always interesting when you shoot a bear, finding them, because you just cross your fingers that you made a good shot on them.
Yeah, they don't bleed a ton. At least the ones I've shot didn't bleed as.
Yeah, especially in the spring, because they got really thick hides and long fur. And his dang bear, we went and got the truck and drove back up, and literally we looked for an hour trying to find that big old stinking bear. And it literally was like, I think probably 30 yards from the bait.
Fell in a hole or what?
Yeah, there was this hole, and there's a tree that had fallen over the top with a lot of branches over top, and he was underneath that. But
gotcha.
Walking up on that bear, though, as I got closer and closer, I was just like, "Man, this thing is huge." I mean, it was, and it's funny, you know, one of the things I love about bear baiting is not just the chance to get a bear, but I love getting them on cameras, you know.
Yeah.
I've gotten sore. I put up one of my cameras on video and just seeing those things, watching them, watching their behaviors. It was amazing. I just love them. And, you know, last year, once again, this was in the morning. I had a bear come in the morning, and I decided I wasn't going to shoot it, but just sat there and watched him for an hour. It was just the coolest thing ever. Yeah. But, you know, as far as the fear, I don't know. And bears, I'm just going to go. Like I said, I'd rather be out there than be afraid and not go.
Yeah. Risk reward, right?
I want to be out there. So,
yeah.
But yeah, if you're scared to death of bears, probably stay home. So. I will say this. I don't get really good sleep in bear country.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of gets in your head at night, you know, wonder if one comes in.
Yeah.
But, you know,
I think it's like anything. It's like, I remember the first time I went backpacking on my own. So like, I remember pretty vividly the first night I spent on my own, you know, on a backpack bow hunt. And I remember the first night just feeling a little edgy, you know, I wasn't comfortable. But the more often you do it 4 or 5 times, and then it kind of rolls in, and you're starting to do maybe a week at a time if you're backpack elk hunting or something like that. It's got to the point now where I don't even think about it. Like I don't even think about backpack elk hunting, you know, just throwing out my bivy sack underneath the tree and I go right to sleep. I mean, it'll take me 5 seconds. And I think it's probably the same way with bear hunting or hunting in bear country. You got to face the fear initially, and you probably are going to feel nervous. You probably are going to be a little bit scared and intimidated, but you know, the more often you do it, the more comfortable you get with it. And you know, after you've seen a few bears and you get to kind of understand that, hey, yeah, they're here, but if I'm, you know, cautious and keep my head on a swivel, you know, I'll probably be okay.
You know, that's one of the things I worry about is getting too comfortable.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, and there's, I don't know. I think the majority of bears, it's weird because people have different concepts of bears, but I think a lot of people think that bears, you see a bear and it's going to attack you regardless. Yeah. I mean, it's a bear. It's ornery. It's going to, I bet 99% of bears just want to get away from you. They don't want to be around you. They don't want, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be careful. And especially in Wyoming, I know some people get in trouble after they get an animal on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
That's really when you're on super high alert. And even that, what you want to do is get that animal taken care of as soon as possible and get those quarters away from that carcass as soon as you can. Generally speaking, they're going to come into the gut pile first. They're going to take care of that. And I have heard stories of people shooting elk and, you know, bears come in on them. So you just want to be careful. And if there's two of you, then obviously you want to have somebody watching.
Be a lookout. At all times.
Yeah, be a lookout. But you just want to be careful. And but yeah, there are areas in Wyoming you got to be super careful when you get an animal on the ground. So
yeah. I want to switch topics on you a little bit, because the other thing I admire about you is you place a high value, which I do as well, but I think you take it even that much more, you know, farther. You have a high value of the meat that you get from your animals. So you've always taken a lot of pride in butchering, getting the most meat off them, aging them, cutting them up yourself, packaging it, cooking it. I wanted you to tell people, like, what's your process? So, like, you get an animal, you get the meat home. Like, what's your process of how you take care of it? And maybe give somebody, like, your favorite recipes. How do you like to cook it? And what is your favorite meat?
First of all, my favorite meat, I don't know. I think it's got to be antelope.
Mine too.
And it's funny, like, our moms will not eat it. She will not eat it.
Yeah.
She had a bad experience one time, and I love it. But it's one of those things, antelope especially, I've learned that you got to take care of it right away. I mean, you got to get skinned, got to get it cooled off. You do that within the first half hour, 45 minutes, that antelope's going to be awesome. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, yeah, I used to gut elk and all that, and then I just, like, why anymore? What's the point? I don't, there's no point to do that. So I'll quarter it. I bring those quarters home, and I have a friend that he has a walk-in cooler. Mm-hmm. And so he'll let me take those quarters and hang those quarters. And I've read studies, and I think Field and Stream did one, and they said about 14 days is about the optimal time for taste and tenderness and stuff like that. So I usually hang those quarters in his walk-in cooler, except for this year. Because like I said, we bought our own place, and it was cool enough. I got a big shed, and it was cool enough out there that I could just hang my elk quarters out in that shed. So
didn't you at one point buy like an old fridge off of a classified and then got the thing?
I did. I don't remember if I bought it or the house that we were in had one there. Somebody left it. But anyway, I use that for antelope. Elk quarters obviously wouldn't fit in that fridge, but
sure,
antelope quarters. And there's a lot of people who say don't age antelope quarters, and that's fine. Don't do it. I mean, for some reason, I've read studies that they don't, whatever enzyme that breaks down the meat, hanging it just doesn't do it. But even antelope, I'll let them hang for a week. I don't know why, I just do.
Yeah.
I don't know what the point is. But for elk and deer, I usually let those hang for 14 days. And my process is I used to take them to a butcher. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, why am I, not that they didn't do a good job and stuff, but I'm like, you know, they're doing something that I can do myself. I can do it at home. Mm-hmm. And so what I do now in my process is, you know, you can butcher an elk and take all day on a Saturday if you want, but I usually, you know, after work, I'll go grab a quarter and I'll just butcher them. And I've got to the point now where I know what cuts of meat I want off of what parts of the elk. Mm-hmm. You know, so
what's your favorite cut?
Backstrap. I mean, I really like, and of course, you know, this one of my traditions that I do with my boys is we'll bring those tenderloins home and we'll run to the grocery store. Well, usually we have it in the fridge before we go hunting, so it's just available with bacon. Mm-hmm. And I'll do bacon wrapped elk tenderloins, usually the day that we get that elk. And
yeah.
And I really like the Montreal steak seasoning. I'll use that a lot. And so that's, I like the tenderloin, but I will say the tenderloins, a lot of them are, I don't know, stringy.
Yeah.
Just a different cut.
Yep. Yeah. That tradition is it's a tradition that you've had. I don't know how long you've had it, at least since I can remember, since you've been in Wyoming, but it's one that I've adopted. So usually if I get an animal and I get it home in time, that I can, you know, get a cut of a tenderloin or a backstrap, usually that same day, or if not that day, the next day. And we do the same thing. We do, yeah, bacon wrap tenderloin. And I think I stole that from you.
Yeah. And I will say that the elk that I got this last year, man, it was, maybe one of the best elk I've ever gotten. So good. So good. But yeah, I'll butcher a quarter every evening. And of course, leftovers, whatever's leftovers, we grind it. Sometimes I'll do summer sausage.
Yeah, I've done awesome summer sausage.
Yeah, I've done meat sticks. And it's funny, like my first bear, I just, you know, in Wyoming, by law, you don't have to take any meat. Mm-hmm. You take the hide, you take the skull. But after my first one, I kind of felt guilty leaving bear meat out there, you know, because I know sure. You can eat it, you take care of it. So now I bring, and my wife will not eat it. But I have found that if I take the bear meat and do summer sausage with it, mm-hmm. really good, really good. She will eat the summer sausage off of bears. And this bear that I got this last year, I actually came home and ground some up and made hamburgers with it. Mm-hmm. Really good. Really good. So
yeah, bear burgers.
Bear burgers. Those are really good. And I'd love the elk hamburgers that I've done.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just kind of a throw some Montreal steaks seasoning on them and fry them in butter. Or I did get a moose a couple years ago. And with moose, you know, it was a little bit chewy. And it has a different sweet taste to it. So I was doing Googling, you know, how do you cook moose? And some guy's like, you know what? Cook bacon. Don't wrap it in bacon, but cook bacon and then fry your moose steaks in
bacon grease.
Bacon grease. And that has been, and I found with the moose too, you don't want to overcook that stuff. So
You like antelope better than moose?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the moose steaks have been pretty good, but I will say the moose roasts that I got are phenomenal. Huh. Moose roasts were phenomenal. Just love the moose roasts.
Yeah.
Really good. But yeah, I think honestly, if the Game and Fish would let me get like 15 antelope a year, I would do it. I mean, I just love it. There's just something about it. It's really tasty. It's probably the most tender out of all of them.
Yeah.
So just yeah. So good.
I agree. Yeah. And it is all in how you take care of it. Get the hide off, keep the hair off the meat. Yeah. Get it cool. And if I've done that, like I've never had a bad antelope, and I'm with you. I look forward to cooking that every year, and my kids love it. My boys will eat it. Like they'll eat it. Just no question.
Yeah, I mean, we've done meatloaf with our game meat. We've done meatballs. We've done all kinds of stuff, mm-hmm. but like, what's your favorite recipe? What do you like?
Oh man. Well, there's a couple. So one of them would be like this, you know, like broccoli beef, like Asian broccoli, uh-huh. broccoli beef. I really like that. I like to take steak and like cut it super, super thin and do it with like a teriyaki sauce. So broccoli beef, I love that one. I'll eat that one. I'll eat the leftovers on that one for as long as we've got it. Like I love those. Yeah, broccoli beef. And then I just like your basic pan fry. You know, I sometimes batter it with just like a flour, salt, pepper, maybe some garlic salt, some onion powder, and get a pan hot and then just fry it. And I like bacon grease too. I've done that before too. Try to save some bacon grease and then pan fry it in bacon grease.
And I one thing that I really like too with the moose meat, I'll just share this really quick, and this is something I just tried, but I would cook steaks and I would cook them medium rare. Mm-hmm. And I'd always save one or two for the next day. Mm-hmm. And then I would cut them in little thin strips, cook up some strips of bacon, and I would do a moose steak sandwich with tomatoes and lettuce and bacon and moose steaks, you know, a little salt and pepper.
Sounds incredible.
They were phenomenal. Yeah. So stinking good. I mean, even my daughter that's in Oklahoma would be like, first time she tried it, she's like, this is just fantastic.
Yeah.
So good. But I will share a real quick story too about the bear meat, the bear mm-hmm. summer sausage. We took some down my wife's family. They're not hunters at all, mm-hmm. any of them. They, you know, they've grown up in the city, but we took some bear summer sausage down and I was like, don't tell them what this is because they will not eat it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so we cut it up little pieces with some cheese and some crackers. And my niece was over there and she was just chowing on it. Everybody's chowing on it. And I eventually I was like, oh, how do you like the bear meat? I'm like, what? It's like, yeah, the bear sausage.
Yeah. Was she okay with it? Did she keep eating it?
No, we never actually told her what.
Oh, gotcha. So she's
everybody else. I told everybody else. So
it is funny. People are funny that way. We had Angie's nephew Parker. So my nephew Parker, his wife, we had them over. Oh, it's been probably a year or so ago. And I'd made a bunch of steaks, and one of them was antelope. And I think she'd eaten a couple pieces of steak. Never said a word. Loved it. I was like, how is it? Great. It's awesome. And then I told her it was antelope after the fact. And now she'll be like, no, I don't want to eat antelope. I think she'd probably entertain it now, but there for a while, she was just like, nope, not eating antelope. But I'm like, but you ate two of them and loved it. I don't know what it is about people's perception. You know,
I just think it's a lot nicer for people. They go to the grocery store. Hey, there's a package of beef,
I guess.
And they don't realize that beef, you know, some of them, of course, now we've got the old grass fed phenomenon, sure. You know, mm-hmm. whatever. But I'm like, you know, most of those cows are in pens and they're rolling around in their own.
Yeah. Filth.
Feces most of the time. And, mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I just love processing. I love the whole process. I love the satisfaction of like, hey, this is something that I did, that steak mm-hmm. that we're eating. I went out and I got it myself.
Yeah.
You know, I love that. I love that whole process. And they're, you know, obviously there's people, I have friends that just, they don't like doing it. They don't like cutting up their own stuff. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm just weird, I guess. I love doing it. I don't mind it. It's just work. It's just work. So,
yeah, I love cooking it. I'm one of those people, like, I don't necessarily love the process of actually cutting up meat, wrapping it. It takes a long time for me.
I vacuum seal mine.
Yeah. 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 For me to like cut, wrap, you know, trim all that whole process, it'll take me quite a while to do an elk. And you know, my back always hurts cause I'm just standing there hour after hour cutting meat. But the one thing I do really like is grabbing a package of meat and, you know, thawing it out, opening it up and prepping a meal. I like sharing it. So our cousin Melly that lives here in Cedar, you know, just before Christmas, she invited me over and I went over for an evening just to visit them because I hadn't seen them in ages and ages. And I took her and her boyfriend a bunch of meat. So I took them just a smorgasbord of meat. I took antelope, elk, deer. I took them a bunch of halibut, some rockfish, and it's been really fun. So at any time that they cook it, which they've been cooking it and eating it a lot, she'll send me a photo, you know, and like, hey, this is amazing. And it's awesome. And every time I get one, it just makes me happy.
Yeah. I like sharing too, but, my wife will tell, I'm very particular, like my antelope meat. I'm like, don't even think about giving that away. Yeah. Don't even. And sometimes even elk, I'm just like, man. Uh-huh. And I'm just like, I don't know. Just elk is so hard. They're so hard to hunt. They're so hard to pack out. You mm-hmm. put so much time and effort in it.
Yep.
I mean, physically, mentally, financially, I mean, it's just
a lot of
work. I'm just like, no, dude, that's, and they're hard to butcher. They're not hard to butcher, but it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But yeah, if you have a walk-in cooler, if you know that somebody has a walk-in cooler, like I said, if you just do a quarter a night, it kind of breaks up the process where you're not doing it all at once. You're not standing there all at once. One of my, you know, like I've got this big shed now and I would love to get a walk-in cooler in there. We'll see.
I think I told you
I saw those ones now. They've got this pop-up thing that you can pop up and put the cooler. So maybe we'll get one of those.
Yeah.
We'll see. Who knows?
I hope you do. I've had you for an hour and 18. I wanted to cover one more thing before I cut you loose. One of my biggest regrets looking back on, you know, I'm in my 40s now, 45. One of my biggest regrets looking back is that I haven't taken as much time to hunt with family. You know, we've done a few hunts together, annually, every season when, you know, it comes up and I'm applying and, you know, there's certain hunts that I'm going to do, you know, with people at work and we're going to do films and videos and that kind of thing. But one of the things I regret is not going with family more often. I would like to improve that and I would like to get a chance to go hunting, you know, with you and Todd and Tracy more often. But one of my most cherished memories is you and I hunting elk in Wyoming that year. I drew that archery tag and, you know, you were kind enough to go with me. It was a total wilderness area. So we backpacked in. I think we were 11 miles or so back in there together. I regret that we didn't hunt longer. Like, I love that hunt and it was awesome. And the outcome was phenomenal. I killed a really good bull, but I think I killed it, the second day we were in there.
We hadn't even, if you remember back, we hiked in there. We hadn't even been hunting.
Yeah.
Because we spent some time hiking in. We went halfway. Remember that story?
Yeah.
You're talking about bears.
You can tell
being scared of bears, you and I, you know, we're hiking in the dark in grizzly bear country. And remember the eyes we saw on the trail?
Oh, yeah.
But I'm not convinced that last set of eyes with the smaller one wasn't a bear.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't move, remember?
Yeah, I remember.
Bears to death.
I think that was at the point where I was like, okay, maybe we've gone far enough in the dark. Maybe we just camp.
That's so funny to bring that up, because I was just thinking about that the other day, you know, hunting in Wyoming when I had type 1 tags. There was a couple years me and my son were like, you know, we just never get up there when the elk are, mm-hmm. It seems like they're already heading to bed. When yep. So there was a couple years we're like, we're going up there and we're hiking in the dark, dang it.
Mm-hmm.
In grizzly bear country, we did that.
Yeah.
But if you remember, actual hunt time on that hunt was less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
But remember hiking up in that next morning, and there's elk mewling across the way from us. And
yep.
That's a phenomenal area, man. I just, lots of bears.
I'd love to get back. It's funny, when I think about that hunt, I think about the things that come to mind. I remember the actual, you know, the shot itself, the way it developed. And I remember, you know, I shot that bull at about 55 yards, and I remember him kind of going down through the ravine. He went up on the other side of the hill and he tipped over dead. I watched him die. But really, when I think back on that hunt, the things that I cherish and I remember the most are you and I hiking in and out and, you know, getting a chance to talk. And I remember, you know, we took that little 2-man tent. We stayed in that tent together. I remember laying in there in bed.
Camped right on a wallow. Remember that?
Yeah, right off a wallow on accident. Yeah, we set up right on a wallow, camped on it because we were in there at dark. But, yeah, I just remember getting a chance to just, like, talk and just, you know, hang out. I remember after we'd killed that elk and we were packing out, I remember we stopped at that one little, you know, stream to get water, and we filled up, we sat there and drank and ate some food. And I've still got a bunch of pictures of, you know, you and I just kind of sitting there together. And that's like one of my very favorite memories and my favorite, just really my favorite part of that whole hunt. I remember is just like being together and hiking together and just catching up and talking and just
being. Yeah, I remember on the way out, you're like, I'm never bringing this guy again because I slipped twice carrying your bow and slammed it on the ground. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah, you carried my bow. I remember that. It was pretty gnarly country, though. And I think the one time you fell was right in the river, right? The river crossing.
Did I fall in the river? I almost did. I remember going down a hill once and there was some loose rock and slipping.
Yeah. I think,
which happens,
yeah. I think you took a tumble right in the river on the way out, but at that point we were only 200 yards from the truck. So
I don't remember if I fell in. I remember I almost did. Almost did.
I remember by that point I was probably so dang tired. I was delirious. That was a long ways in.
I may have stumbled a little bit, but no, speaking of bears, remember that guy back in there? We went to his camp and he's like, I've got this grizzly that passes my camp every morning.
Yeah. I remember him specifically saying, you guys don't have to worry about that bear because that's a good bear.
Yeah, it's a good bear.
Yeah, he's like, that one, that's a good bear. That one just leaves us alone. You don't got to worry about that one.
I have heard, though, in that area, you know, over the last few years, people getting elk and bears. I know a guy that shot an elk. Well, his nephew shot an elk and had a bear claim. I don't know what they were doing. They went back to camp, come back, and there was already a bear on their
elk.
Yeah, that's something else I would advise. You know, they advise if a bear gets your meat, whatever gets on your elk, just let the bear have it.
Right.
But no, that was an awesome experience. Yeah, I love that. Love that hunt. It was so cool. Last summer, I actually took my oldest son and my daughter. We backpacked. We didn't go back in that same drainage, but we hiked back in there six miles this last summer and caught some cutthroat and it's some awesome country back in there. Love it.
Yeah. You're always out and about. I know that.
Well, I try, but yeah, it'd be fun to get together and hunt some more.
Is your degree in history?
my degree's in history, but yeah, I've never. I teach Spanish. People are wondering online, and yeah, Spanish has always paid the bills. So
I've always known. Yeah, but I've always known you to be like interested in history, and you're always reading. It seems like. Is there any books that you've read recently that you would recommend?
The last one I read is that one. It's called A Woman Among Wolves.
Okay.
That lady that she studied wolves for 40 plus years. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting read. And she's not really for or against hunting wolves, mm-hmm. just more her study of wolves.
Interesting.
So that was an interesting book. That's the last one that I've read.
I always like to try to ask people, cause I'm always looking myself. And then I think I've always had people reach out and be like, oh, what was that book that guy recommended? So I always like to ask.
Well, I know Cam Haynes has got a new one coming out, looks like. So
that's right. I heard that. Yeah. Maybe we can get an advanced copy.
Yeah. So I think so. You might be able to.
I don't know.
I've met him a couple times, but.
Yeah.
It was funny the first time I met him, and that phrase of his, nobody cares, work harder. I messed it up and I said, nobody cares. I can't remember what I said. And he was like, no, it's work harder. Oh, sorry. Sorry, buddy.
Like, nobody cares. I still don't care, or something like that.
Sorry. I like Cam Haynes, I guess, but not that much, I guess.
Yeah. you going to be at the Hunt Expo for a day or two? Sounds like.
I'm going to be there on Friday. So.
Okay. Right on.
I'm going to go down to mom and dad's on Thursday. And so, yeah, that's been another tradition. Just go to the Hunt Expo and tool around.
Well, I hope to see you. So I'll plan on catching up with you Friday. Maybe we can grab lunch or something.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and Tracy will be there, and I invited Todd too. We'll see. He might have to work. Don't know.
Right on.
Haven't heard back yet. So
cool. I better let you go. I've had you for an hour and a half, and if I don't, I'm going to pee my pants. So I better.
Oh, gotcha.
I better get to the restroom, and I'll cut you loose. But I really appreciate you coming on and doing this. It was fun to talk to you.
I was kind of surprised, honestly. I was like, okay, who canceled?
No, nobody. I just thought it'd be fun to talk to you. You know, we text message a lot, and like I said, I've always really respected you and the fact that you get out all the time. Like, you have a genuine pure love of the outdoors, and whether it's ice fishing or backpacking or photography or hunting, you always make a priority to get out. Like, you're always doing something. And I always have admired that and looked up to you in that regard in a lot of ways, to be honest. But,
I appreciate that, but I feel like I live vicariously through you. I mean, I was like, man, it'd be so cool, because with my work schedule, I'm like, yeah, weekend, that's about all I get. But like, man, it'd be so cool to get some time.
Yeah. Yeah, man. If you ever retire, we can get, you just need some more free time in the fall.
Counting the years.
Yeah, we'll get to it, and then we'll do some of these longer hunts together. Because the older I've gotten, for sure, I'm constantly every year looking at it and thinking, man, time's ticking by and it's going faster and faster. And I really do want to try to capitalize and get out into the field more with you and Todd and Tracy. And,
yeah, you know, and the older you get, the more meaningful I believe they are. You know, and
absolutely.
And not only like physically, but you know, you start slowing down, and mm-hmm. that's something my son said this year. Yeah, hiking with dad, you know, he's just really slow. I mean, I'm like, yeah, on purpose. I get where I need to go, but what's the rush, you know? Just enjoy it. I think guys just go running up the hills and they miss so much, and just enjoy it. And it's just, I don't know. That's just the way I'm getting anymore, where I'm like, yeah, it's cool. I want to get an animal, but if I don't, I'm cool with that too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's fun just even seeing them out there and just sitting watching them. I really enjoy it. So
yeah, but it's a good spot to be in life where you can, your appreciation for the small things is increased. And I've noticed that too. I'm that much more grateful. You know, every hunt, inevitably there'll be some moment or a couple of moments where it just like captivates me in a way. And I'm just so appreciative of those opportunities. And the older I get, it feels like the more appreciative I am. I don't know if it's just because it means there's less, you've got less time ahead of you, but yeah, I'm grateful for that for sure.
Well, yeah. Well, I hope we get to do some more hunts together, and
yeah,
I always enjoy those. They're always fun. It's always a good time.
Me too. Well, I'll cut you loose. I appreciate you doing this, and I look forward to seeing you on Friday.
Yeah, because I could talk forever, so I don't want you to pee yourself.
Okay. Love you, brother.
Love you, too. Talk to you later.
Have a good day. Bye.
You too. Bye.